IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of All Things Policy. My name is Suman, and in today's episode, I have with me my colleague Sarthak. You would have heard about him in previous episodes. Hello Sarthak, welcome to the show.
Hi Suman, thanks for having me in one more episode of All Things Policy.
Thank you for being here. Okay, this episode is also special because we have two of our students here, alumni from our previous cohort of the GCPP, Rakesh and Saurabh. Rakesh, could you please introduce yourself?
Thanks, Suman. Thanks for having us here at All Things Policy podcast. Really glad to be here. I'm a student of GCPP May batch. I'm currently working as a public policy consultant in one of the big fours for the last 4 years. Have a total work experience of about 7 years in consulting, technology, and public policy. Prior to that, I've done my MBA from Indian Institute of Management, Kozhikode. And prior to that, I've done my engineering in electronics and communication from Cochin University of Science and Technology, Cochin. Really glad to be here. Thank you.
Great, Rakesh. Welcome to the show. Saurabh?
Hi, Suman. Hi, Sarthak and Rakesh. Thank you, first of all, for inviting us here on All Things Policy. Really glad to be here. I also primarily have background in public policy. I've worked as a public policy consultant for about 4 years. In one of the big fours. Prior to that, I did my MBA from MDI Gurgaon, and before that, my engineering from BITS Pilani. Currently, I'm working as a manager in startup, and this particular topic of MSPs is something very I have been very familiar with for the past few years, because some of my policy work or consulting work actually went into this area, or the sector of agriculture and horticulture. So really glad to be talking about it over here. Thank you.
Great, Saurabh, great, Rakesh. Thank you. Thank you for being here and welcome. So let's get started right away. Yeah. The reason we have Rakesh and Saurabh here is because they've authored this wonderful blog piece, which is titled MSPs and the Market Failures. To give context, I'm sure all our listeners, you've been following the farm protests in the wake of the new farm laws that have been proposed. The crux of the issue of the entire farm and agricultural income is about the farmer's income. All of us know data about farm income. 50 to 60% of the population is engaged in agriculture, but they only contribute 15 to 20% of the GDP. Recently, I read that the average daily income of a farmer is about 27 rupees per day. Theoretically speaking, this is even less than what they would be earning if they did, you know, part of Mahatma Gandhi National Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme. So the farming sector is really in dire straits. And we are not going to go into the entire farm laws or anything. We have already done one episode on that. We'll link it here. The important aspect of the entire agricultural puzzle here is the contentious issue of the MSP. The government has also declared recently its commitment to MSP by announcing MSP for the rabi season crops. Okay, so first we'll take a step back to learn about what the MSP is and why it came into being. Could you please talk about what it is and why it came into being?
Sure, Suman, I'll do that. So the roots of MSPs go back to early 1960s, and this is the period when country was facing huge food scarcity. And I don't know, I mean, my father's generation, they used to tell that there were ships flying in from US, PL-480 ships. They used to send a lot of food grains. And that was the time when agriculture in India had really hit its rock bottom. And that is when this MSP was introduced. And it's very interesting that MSP in its early days was introduced to basically incentivize farmers in the states of, you know, Punjab, Haryana, and Western Uttar Pradesh to grow these high-yielding varieties. I mean, these high-yielding varieties had just come up whole of Europe and, you know, Northern America had started using it. But in India and within Indian farmer, there was a huge aversion to it. So, I mean, the great Indian agriculture scientists like M.S. Swaminathan and all, they went and they basically, you know, assuaged farmers that, you know, if you grow this, probably the food production is going to increase and probably we'll be able to, you know, tackle our food scarcity challenges. So within that context, since the farmers were reluctant to use those high-yielding varieties, a sort of a floor, price floor in terms of MSP was introduced so that even if the farmers, you know, if the crops are failing, they will have some sort of income protection. So this is the kind of a background in which MSP was introduced, basically to provide protection to the risk-taking farmers. But it is being played in today's time completely differently.
Yeah, so we all realize that the intent of the policy was great, but it led to certain other consequences that has really plagued us since then.
So Rakesh, since you were mentioning about how it was a price floor, I just want to add a couple of things here. Now, so when MSP was introduced, it was kind of a guarantee that, okay, if there is a bumper harvest, the prices crash, then also you are safeguarded. I mean, the government will pay you certain prices. But it is not exactly a price floor. Generally, price floors are something slightly different if you look at it from the economics perspective, right? So price floor is basically a price which has been decided by the government. And any transaction for a particular good or service, if it is going to happen, it has to happen above the price floor. So government decides the price. And if buying, selling is happening, it has to happen at that price or above that price. That's a price floor.
So technically it was not a price floor, but basically it's called as minimum support prices, MSP, that we know.
Yeah.
So in that particular time, government used to notify two different sets of prices. One used to be your minimum support prices, which is MSP, and another used to be your procurement prices. So government used to procure at procurement prices. In case the crops used to fail, the government used to provide the minimum support prices. So that is how it used to basically work.
Yeah, true. But one thing here, for certain crops in India and certain places, there do exist price floors, by the way. For example, when it comes to sugarcane in Haryana and Uttar Pradesh, they call it something as fair and remunerative prices. Those are price floors. But whatever be the case, since government procures a lot of agricultural commodities in India, it's a huge, it procures at bulk, it tends to intervene into the markets, it tends to disrupt the markets.
Sure. Correct. Saurabh, you have something to add?
Right. So I just wanted to add that with regard to the MSPs or the minimum support prices, over time, while the policy itself wasn't amended, the government continued to procure at higher and higher prices. And in the belts and the regions where in Punjab, Haryana, and Uttar Pradesh, where wheat was grown quite extensively, you saw this policy kind of becoming sort of a guarantee to or an incentive to continue to grow these crops extensively. And I think this is where largely the problem lies, that India transitioned from a food scarce to a food surplus country, but the policy that was meant to kind of append or change that didn't change with the times itself. So I think a large part of the problem actually comes from there.
Yeah, so exactly. So the focus of all public policy is to remove all kinds of failures, societal failures, market failures, or government failures. The intent of the MSP was to ensure a certain minimum price to protect farmers, etc. But that has led to a whole set of new market failures. So in your blog, you have spoken about three of them mostly, concentration of power, negative externalities, transaction costs, along with information asymmetry. So let's take this one by one. Could you elaborate on the concentration of market power in this?
Yeah, so sure. So I'll take this up. So I mean, the current market architecture of agri, if you'll see in India, it currently operates through, and especially in the states, it operates through something called APMCs. And within APMCs are basically agriculture produce market committees. And they operate through two different sorts of markets. One is called principal market, another is called sub-market yards. So how does it work that if you are a farmer, you have a produce and you want to sell it at MSP, you have to bring that produce to APMC. These APMCs have a certain geographical boundaries within which they operate. I think in India, about you have about 2,500 APMCs as of now across 11 or 12 different states. I mean, agri being a state subject, so states primarily regulate and legislate on that. And these MSPs on these producers are notified by central government. So what you're basically doing, and what this recent Farm Act, which tried to abolish these APMCs, was trying to do, is that they were trying to abolish APMCs. So what it basically meant that you are now giving the farmer the freedom to sell their product, produce anywhere outside the mandis as well. As of now, they are geographically bound to sell it within mandis. I mean, if you have to fetch MSP prices, you have to go to mandi and sell it at the particular MSP price. With this recent Farm Act, it was supposed to be abolished, obviously. But the problem is that, you know, like we basically discussed the historical context, that it was supposed to be minimum support price and there used to be a certain procurement price. As of now in India, for a lot of grains, MSP has become the highest procurement prices in the market. If you will look at the procurement prices for wheat within the mandis and outside the mandis, within mandis, a wheat is sold at about 1900 rupees a quintal. Outside the mandis, I mean, if you'll go about 20, 30, 40 kilometers outside it, it will be sold at 1300, 1400 rupees a quintal. So basically what you're doing, right? And we studied this in GCPP, that all kinds of prices are signals, right? When you are telling to the farmer that you produce whatever you have to, I'm giving you the procurement assurance at this particular price, which is about, you know, a 30-40% higher than what is the prevalent market price. What you're basically doing in the process is you're basically distorting the market. In any kind of market, the demand and supply should dictate what's the price and the quantity that is to be produced. But governments, since for multiple reasons, farmers are a good vote bank, and it makes for different sorts of political economy. Interesting political economy questions and answers. So in that entire process, this entire architecture has been distorted at some level. And who's paying the price for it? It's the common people, right? If you look at the FCI's debt, right, it has crossed about it's more than about 3 lakh crores. And there's a huge supply glut on top of that in the market, right? If you will just read last year's data on, what's the surplus food grain? I mean, in 2014-15 data we had looked at in the article also, entire country needed only about 24.5 million metric tons of paddy and about 18.52 tons of wheat. The surplus rice production in that particular year was about 3.4 times, and surplus wheat production was about 4.9 times. So by giving that signal that you produce whatever you have to, we will basically assure the that procurement. So all the farmers are just producing rice and wheat, and FCI is just procuring them at 1 rupee, 2 rupee under National Food Security Act. So in that way, it has created different sorts of distortions in the entire market structure.
Yeah, so Rakesh, market distortions, yeah, definitely this is one of the unintended consequences here. And one more thing, right? So if there is surplus production, I mean, it might not be something which is overtly negative, but what we need to look at it is the opportunity cost, right? So maybe something could have, same amount of resources could have been used for something else. So I think looking at the opportunity costs also makes more sense here.
Right. So we studied about marginal cost of funds, right? I mean, I think you or Anupam had taken that, right? So for 1 rupee spent by government, the opportunity cost is about 3 or 4 rupees, as Kilkat and Shah calculated. So if they're spending about 3 lakh crores, FCI is spending about 3 lakh crores on procurement of wheat and paddy, so the actual estimated cost on national exchequer is about 10 lakh crores. India's budget is about 34 lakh crores, so which is about 30% of our budget, union budget expenditure, which is a huge amount. The same could have been used for education or healthcare. So, yes.
Yeah, thanks for that, Rakesh. Moving on to the next market failure that you have spoken about, talking about, say, negative externalities that this whole regime of MSP is perpetuating. Saurabh, could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, that's one of the key problems, that the excess incentive to procure also leads to, well, excess incentive to produce those particular set of crops. And as it so happens that since there is assured procurement of sorts for these crops, which are extremely water intensive, naturally the areas where they are grown, you see a lot of negative externality in terms of water usage and groundwater depletion. Previously, several agroeconomists have suggested moving the production of wheat and paddy from, say, the northern belt in like Punjab, Haryana, and the western Uttar Pradesh to kind of areas near which are water intensive in UP and Bihar. And the primary reason for that is because it requires you to have this continuous overlay of water allocation to these resources, right? And this is one of the negative externalities that has kind of continuously grown. So right now, if you look at water tables within Punjab and Haryana, you see that they stand depleted a lot. So that's one of the main negative externalities that really comes out of it. There are other negative externalities as well, but especially when talking in terms of MSP procurements, which drive up the production and surplus glut in wheat and paddy, I think this is one of the biggest negative externalities that really stands out. I mean, Punjab in the next 10 to 15 years faces a real risk of desertification, and that completely requires a shift in policy, but not in a format of piecemeal policy making, but rather than a shock and awe. And I think that is particularly very important to look at. So that's what I wanted to say, that while the policies right now definitely wants to de-link the markets, I think the second set of policies that may need to come in future is to address these negative externalities, because initially or for a few years, it's not like the production is immediately going to shift away from wheat and paddy. There is still going to be a lot of production that's still going to happen on wheat and paddy in these areas, right? And there needs to be a certain amount of effective policy paradigm that needs to be introduced in order to address this second order effect as well.
Yeah, so sort of one more thing as I just wanted to add here is, so since this is kind of an assured price that farmers are getting, so this also leads to some form of an inertia. It doesn't induce or does not incentivize them to change course, right? So if there is negative externality, it tends to continue, and there might be an unwillingness to look for other options, look for other alternatives as well.
Correct. Yeah. In fact, if you really talk about it, there has been some effort in the past by Government of India and even by Punjab government itself to introduce pulses kind of as one of the alternatives to be grown, pulses and oil seeds, because they are also quite lucrative crops in place of, say, wheat or paddy. But because there is an assured procurement policy and in the minds of the farmers from FCI, the shift to these pulses and oil seeds has also largely not been very successful. So there definitely needs to be a policy push in that area as well. I mean, Punjab accounts for roughly about 12 to 13% of total rice and wheat production in country. But FCI procurement in the cycle between, I think, 2018 or 19, it accounted somewhere between 25 to 30% of the total procurement. That's really disproportionate. Yeah. So, of course, that kind of also needs to change.
Yeah, I think at this point, we need to take a short break. We'll take a break and we'll be back with the other two. Welcome back, everybody. We are here to talk about the MSP regime and the kind of market failures it has caused. So we spoke about concentration of power and the negative externalities. We'll move to the last one, the transaction costs along with information asymmetry. Yeah. So let's take it from there.
So, as we already discussed a lot about MSPs and different kind of market failures, one important another aspect that comes out is the transaction costs. And to set the context correct, when I say transaction costs, I basically mean costs that are used or needed by buyers and sellers to kind of search, move goods or bargain in the market. Some reference for them to say that I will price my product at this, or I would sell it as this, or I would buy it as this. Now, what happens with MSPs is, since MSP creates an architecture where is an artificially imposed price is put in the market, farmers are inclined not to come to the market with the intention of pricing the product themselves by saying that I have put in X amount of money in the input costs, so and so forth. I will add so much of markup for of the logistics of bringing that crop to the market yard or to the seller or the prospective seller.
And I would add another, say, a profit margin for myself on that, and then try to sell it and then negotiate with the buyer after that. That doesn't really happen in the way you expect normal markets to function, because the first and the last price signal that comes very authoritatively is there is the MSP. And that leads to this problem where without having this incentive to kind of search for better prices, mark the better prices, see how logistics are costs, farmers kind of tend to sell either below prices of the MSP itself, and traders definitely take kind of an advantage for that, because it creates sort of a middle level within the Indian agricultural economy, where you have a certain set of people who make their own profit on the basis of the arbitrage that arises because of this gap and this market failure of transaction costs, right? So just let me give an example of that. There was an IMA study, the paper that we read and researched during this article about the ENAM platform and the Unified Market platform. And the paper talked about Karnataka. It wanted to see whether ENAM actually reduces the transaction costs or gains in marketing efficiency and whatnot. They found that it doesn't really create a large set of change in that for small and marginal farmers. And largely that was because most farmers tend to rely on goodwill of these traders and other intermediaries. And because these other intermediaries also tend to provide other kind of services of loans or debt, logistic service of some sort. And essentially what happens is whatever markup price or whatever price setting that happens, it doesn't really happen at the producer level. And because there is no incentive to kind of maximize the price output or rather profit output for these farmers by reducing the transaction costs, it really doesn't work that way. And ENAM, even if when they tried to address it when it was launched in 2016, hasn't caught up well in the market in trying to address this market failure. So I believe there's some scope of policy change over there as well.
Yeah, so I would just want to come in and add to what just Saurabh said, right? I mean, so there's this entire problem of middlemen, you know, middlemen in the APMC yards. And these middlemen are called as arthiyas. I mean, and so if you have to sell any kind of produce to retailer or private companies, you have to go through these arthiya route. Now, these arthiyas, what they do, if you have to sell the produce, they will impose some sort of mandi tax on you. And if you look at this mandi tax would vary from state to state. And if you look at Punjab, and one of the reasons why Punjab government has been behind the protesters is that Punjab levies about a mandi fee about 6% in the case of rice. And if you look at the comparative number for Delhi, it's about only 1%. So APMC mandis going away means a lot of loss of revenue to Punjab government. Similarly, for pulses and all kinds of goods which are primarily sold through APMC mandis, you would have such, you know, a non-efficient taxation, you know, which again passed on to consumers through, you know, inflation and all of that. So this again sort of creates some sort of inefficiency in the way this entire architecture is organized. And the futility of this entire architecture was exposed last year during COVID, when we had bumper procurement without involving all of these arthiyas in the first place. So, I mean, that's when this whole debate started, whether do you even need such APMC mandis and these arthiyas who are just middlemen levying taxes and increasing inflation for consumers in the first place. So that's the whole inefficiency part of this transaction cost.
Let me just chime in. Just one small point I wanted to make. While the APMC mandis itself, they are not going away as per the new farm laws. I think the essential intuitive way of looking at this is that APMCs create kind of a lack of interaction, natural lack of interaction between supply and demand, because they essentially act as choke points because are aggregators of the entire supply artificially. So I think that is what the main issue is, that if you had a better supply and demand interaction across the country, you would see essentially prices arriving at their optimum level and the consumer surplus or the producer surplus economic one could easily be maximized for both the buyer and the seller. That's really the core issue here, that the APMCs and all these market failures kind of interact and build this problem and kind of create the second order effects.
So Saurabh and Rakesh, I mean, thanks for pointing out some of the important, interesting dimensions, some of the market failures associated with MSPs. So I just want to reflect whether MSPs are fulfilling the purpose, the objective for which they were brought into picture.
So let's go one step back, and we looked at historically for what reasons it was brought in, right? It was basically to compensate risk-taking farmers. The country was facing food scarcity, right? You don't have any sort of food scarcity these days, right? In fact, you have bumper harvest year on year. FCI doesn't have the go-downs to store the food grains, which are produced year on year by our farmers. So you have to fundamentally ask, is MSP relevant, right? And if you look at, people have gradually started moving away. They want to consume more of pulses. They want to consume more of fruits, vegetables, right? And that's the natural transition that any country has when the per capita income start to go up. So if the normal demand supply mechanics would have worked, producers in states like Punjab, Haryana, UP would have started gradually moving away from rice and wheat to these cash crops, fruits, vegetables, all of that. Since you have this artificially created MSP in place, if you look at the profit margins that farmers are getting in wheat and rice, there is a CACP calculation. The profits are about 40 to 50% on these food grains. So on one side, you have input subsidy in terms of power and fertilizers and all of that. On the other side, you are giving them assured procurement. The procurement price every year gets revised and increasing. And all of this is for what, right? Only a few states are benefiting, Punjab, Haryana, maximum MP or Western UP. You are producing something which country already has. In fact, we have a supply glut of sorts, right? This is causing huge sort of debt on FCI, which nowadays government has started to put the FCI borrowings outside the fiscal deficit. So if you look at the fiscal deficit numbers for FCI, it's about 1% of GDP, which is not coming into your balance sheet at all. So the entire architecture and this MSP in today's time, with today's production levels of this country, I think it has outlived its utility, if I have to put it like that.
Yeah. So that's a good nuance take on the whole thing. But we also need to ask then, why are farmers still poor? Like, we began with this whole thing about farmers are earning just that much and, huge disguised unemployment in the sector, and it's kind of the last resort and stuff like that. So how does this tie into that thing?
If you look at the India growth story, right, till 1980s we have had what is pejoratively called as Hindu rate of growth, 2 to 3% growth. The real growth in India, when about 250 million odd people have been lifted out of poverty, it has only been possible since 90s, right, when we had this LPG reforms, right? What did LPG reforms do? It opened up sectors like industries and manufacturing, right?
Before we go into LPG, for our listeners, we are talking about liberalization, privatization, globalization. Just making it clear. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah. So 90s is when we started opening up this entire, and that is when our real growth has started to happen, right? 1990 to 2011, when we grew at on an average about 6 to 7-8% growth rate, right? And that is when the per capita income in the country has grown, prosperity has increased, people have been lifted out of poverty. The fundamental question that we have to ask, right, in the beginning of the session, you mentioned that 50 to 60% of this country is in farming, right? Why the benefits of such kind of reforms have not been given to the sector which feeds the entire nation, right? Why do you have so grave poverty within Indian farming, right? Why do you still hear about farmers committing suicide in Vidarbha, right? So I mean, uh, So reforms have to happen in all kinds of sectors, and I don't see any reason why reforms, I mean market-led reforms, have been eluded till now in agriculture. It's high time, I think all the three bills, right, which was introduced last year, though invited spirited protest, there could be some give and take, and you know, but I think these are steps in the right directions. Unless or until you don't have market-led reforms, good market-led reforms in agriculture, you wouldn't see high growth rates. Even now, right, when we have bumper harvest, agriculture's growth rate is 3%, 4%. 4% growth rate in agriculture, and we talk about, you know, we have had a great year, right? But what does that, since you have supply glut, the farmer's income doesn't increase, right? Whether you do well or bad, you know, it's not impacting their own lives. Unless or until you don't have privatization in agriculture, these kind of market distortion price signals like MSPs go away. Farmers in India wouldn't do well. So it's high time that market. Yeah.
Yeah, Rakesh, you have correctly pointed out that there are so many market distortions right now, and there is a need for reforms. And generally there is this perception that MSPs are the solutions to this, but that might not be the case. MSPs are basically distorting the entire market. And yeah, there are a lot of externalities associated with it. So solutions to the issues that farmers have right now, the solutions to the issues in the Indian agricultural sector might be in some different form. We might have to consider some of the other alternatives. For example, things like minimum income guarantee can possibly be less harmful, or in fact, it might have different kind of positive impacts as compared to something like a minimum support prices.
Sure. Yeah. Just to round this off, we seem to concur on this thing that the solution to farmer incomes lie outside of agriculture. MSP is one of the problems of the entire gamut of problems that afflict Indian agriculture. Yeah, so the solution would probably lie in creating more jobs outside of farming, which in manufacturing or, you know, in other allied sectors, so that, you know, you can move a huge percentage of people from farming onto these. That would require skilling, education, and all of that. So the road ahead is really, really long. We have to keep this conversation going. Yeah, so I think at this point, we should, it's great that we have started this conversation and this will reach a lot more people. So everybody can get different perspectives before they come to, you know, conclusion on what the ideal solution would be. So before we sign off, if anybody of you have some closing comments on this, it would be great to hear. Saurabh?
Yeah, no, I think within this discussion, we covered most of the market pillars that we wanted to talk about. I just like to add that given the nature of this entire issue, the one thing that really needs to be kind of addressed would be the sheer inertia of the status quo that needed to change, right? Which is the stasis at the policymakers' level. There's a knowledge gap or the skill gap at farmers' level. And then there are challenges due to the nature of the political economy itself. So definitely it's a step in the right direction, I'd say. And hopefully things will change for the better for the Indian agricultural ecosystem.
Yeah, we should not leave out the political economy part of it, because there is no policy without politics. So we have to, you know, take that into consideration before we make any kind of, recommendations. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Rakesh. Thank you, Saurabh. And we hope to see you all again soon. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Suman. Thanks, Sarthak. Thanks for having us here.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.